When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yes, hello out there, everyone, and welcome back to None But the Brave, a presentation of Evergreen Podcast. I am Hal Schwartz, and as always, I'm here with my great buddy Flynn McLean, and tonight we have our March None But the Brave archive review. This will probably be the last one of these for a while, and it's a show that is very worth talking about. September 21st, 1978, the third and final show from the Capitol Theater in Passaic, New Jersey.
Absolutely. In terms of all-around multi-night stands, the three nights in Passaic from September of 78 probably goes to the top of the list, or at least it's definitely in the top two or three. And we've been expecting this one for a while after they released both the 19th, which was also broadcast on NEW and throughout the Northeast. And then they released the September 20th show a few years ago as the Christmas or holiday bonus release. And that one was mixed by Bob Clearmountain, so the bar was quite high in terms of sound quality. And this one does not disappoint. This is a hell of a show. He has a couple of 50s rockabilly numbers in there with High School Confidential and Sweet Little 16. And it's the last show before his birthday. And there's a lot of birthday wishes and birthday presents going on, and including a woman jumping out of a cake. So unfortunately, this is not a video release, but that would be fun to see.
This is a pretty crazy show. Now, as Eric indicates, Eric Flanagan, who writes the liner notes for these releases for Nugs, indicates in his piece, the three shows are very, very distinct. This, I think, is probably the loosest one because of what you just said, all the craziness surrounding the birthday. I think even Bruce is a little taken aback by it. But it starts before even darkness, which is pretty early in the show. And they sing happy birthday to him. But what a stunning performance and an incredible release. If this is the last one for a while and we expect that they will pause for the tour, they gave us a really good one.
Oh, absolutely. I kind of disagree with Eric about this one being too much distinct from the previous night, but there are enough changes here to definitely warrant the release. I think we finally have the definitive recording of the Fever. I think this is the best one of the of the four that have been released from 78, and this one is by far the best sounding.
His voice on the Fever, it's just... it's gorgeous. But let's go back to the start, and I want to talk a little about High School Confidential, which is one of my favorite covers that he does. I had never seen it live. I saw a little piece of it at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony about a year and a half ago when he honored Jerry Lee Lewis. And what a great way to start a show. Just the opening line, "Open up, baby, if it's your lover boy, me that's knocking." It's so good.
To me, what's interesting is that he really has his variety of influences going on. We usually think of Bruce being influenced by the British invasion and the bands of the early to mid 60s, but High School Confidential and Sweet Little 16, they date back to the 50s. So I remember on the Joe tour, he talked about his mom listening to rock and roll radio in the mornings while he was eating his cornflakes. And so I wonder if those two songs kind of come from there.
It is curious, and I see here on Bruce Bass, the sound check that night was pretty involved. Who knows how he comes up with this stuff? Now, Eric does talk about this in the liner notes as well, because he talks about the variation and also draws a present-day parallel, because there have been a lot of people saying, oh, look at the Darkness Tour, there weren't a lot of changes. But as Eric points out, within the multi-night stands on the Darkness Tour, and this is a perfect example, they really did have some major differences from night to night. Another thing that Eric didn't mention, which I think is relevant, Bruce only had released about 34 songs in 1978 in total. So to compare it to 2024, when he's got 10 times that amount released thereabouts, that to me doesn't make a lot of sense. But I just find everything here so compelling. The way the show unfolds, and I don't know, although you do hear at one point he does say, play Sweet Little 16. So we don't know what was on the set list, obviously. We've never seen any set list from this period. But it does seem like that may have been something he selected on the fly there, don't you think?
It may have been, and it's not exactly a complex song. And they have done it. They had done it before on the tour. He had done it, dedicating it to his sister, Pam, a few times. So it's not like it was too far out of the realm. That's done in the same spot that Heartbreak Hotel was done at the October 1st show in Atlanta that was also released.
And the thing is, that was all played right around the time that the birthday stuff in the crowd was getting really large. So he, I think, was riffing off of that, and he even says, this is a birthday song for myself. So just the entire show is phenomenal. Now, to me, this may be, and I understand that Backstreets isn't here, so that's something we'll talk about in a moment, but for what it is, the second set in this show, I think, is about as good as I've heard from the Darkness tour, which perhaps would make it as good as I've heard from any tour.
Yeah, probably. Obviously, for me, Kitty's Back is not exactly a shining jewel in this set, but the Fever certainly is for me. And of course, Incident into Rosie is just, it's amazing. I mean, that's my wife keeps calling it the best segue in the history of music. So, and it's kind of hard to disagree with her too much. I mean, that is the quintessential tension release moment, not only on the album, but every time it appears, there's always an explosion of energy when he does it.
And the thing is, the first set, the performances are just dead on, but the end of the first set is pretty routine for this part of the tour, certainly. There was a mistake that he made in Racing, which adds, I think, a little something extra to the show when that happens. And of course, he didn't have a teleprompter at that point. But the second set, it's like when you're listening to it, you're like, this really happened? Like, they went from this song to the, you had Point Blank, Kitty's Back, The Fever, Incident, Rosie, all in a row. Can you imagine what it must have been like in that theater?
Well, except for the fact that the previous night, as I said, he did Point Blank, Kitty's Back, Incident, Rosie's, just omitting The Fever. So it's not like it was totally out of left field.
That's true.
And he did do Incident a few times on that tour. I think he had just done it at the Palladium as well, just a few nights earlier. And as I mentioned before, at the October 1st show in Atlanta, he did it there as well. So, you know, it's not like it's totally different, especially when really it is the exact same set too as the previous night, except for Fever. So it's not that different.
Well, okay, except the night before, Fire wasn't Fire with an exclamation point.
That was on, wasn't it? Looks like they have taken that off the website. So, but still, my first thought was it was like Jeb Bush's logo when he was running for president in 16, Jeb exclamation, but maybe they just wanted to spice things up. I don't know.
Yeah, that actually cracked me up when I saw it when it came out on Friday. I was like, fire with an exclamation point. But that, you're saying they changed it.
Yes, they have changed it. One thing I do find interesting is Spirit in the Night, and listening to it, he goes into the crowd as always, and you hear him talking, and he's talking to people about catching up on the news. And this was during the newspaper strike in New York City, which went on for two or three months there. So there weren't any newspapers in New York. And he also played that up at the Garden shows. And then you hear him say a couple of times, excuse me, in a reference to Steve Martin's catchphrase at the time. So I thought those were pretty interesting current events that he dropped in there.
Oh, I just caught a mistake of something I said a minute or two ago. The sound check actually was before the September 20th show that included High School Confidential. There's no noted sound check on September 21st. So it seems like on the 20th, he worked out material for both nights.
Well, that 20th sound check is really interesting. The Ties That Bind that he did there was very different. And he runs through, as you mentioned, just a whole bunch of material. I think Wedding Bells is another one. I think I've heard that Lonesome Whistle Blow by Hank Williams. And he was really all over the place. And we're lucky to have a soundboard recording of that one so we can to hear it. It's very fascinating, as you said.
Now, some of the standout tracks on this release, the September 21st release, the Prove It seems to be, and we say this every time we get a Darkness release, but the Prove It really seems to be over the top great.
Yeah, I thought the ending guitar solo by him went on for longer than I remember. Now, I haven't done any kind of comparisons to other nights in Passaic or other shows on the tour, but it definitely went on a little bit longer. I was kind of mystified, though, that Danny's organ solo at the end there, right after the vocals finish, just wasn't as prominent as I was expecting and would like. It sounded kind of distant. And that was kind of odd, considering that Eric mentioned in his essay about Danny being pretty much up front in the mix. And that was a surprise.
Yeah, I didn't notice that as much as you did, but I definitely see what you're saying. Any other standout tracks for you in this show?
Well, Because the Night from 78 are just top notch to me. I love the extended intro with the piano and then the guitar with the reverbing all over the place. I just love that. And of course, Bruce's guitar work on that one at the end and the middle. I mean, all the solos in that song are just amazing. And I just love it. That's the 78 Because the Nights are definitely the best that he's ever done.
That's 100%. The other one I would point out here is, and it was only played this night of the three, is the finale quarter to three, which I think gave the crowd, to use a term you like to use a lot, the release that they needed.
Yes, he was going nuts for the full 10 minutes or so. And he really brings out a couple of his big phrases about stop me before I hurt myself. I'm just a prisoner of rock and roll. And of course, are you talking to me? He brings that one out and follows it up with, well, you better yell louder than that, which is another phrase he used actually in 88. So he always kind of goes back to that one.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Well, Eric points out that it's hard to debate which of the three shows is the best, and they do have a distinct feel. I know a lot of the set overlaps, and as you were pointing out, songs like Incident into Rosie were both played the second and third night. But for me, I do think that there's a fairly distinct feel to these shows when I listen to them. Of course, the September 19th show is a broadcast. It was, I'm sure, a big night for them to broadcast the show in the tri-state area on WNEW. And that was the purest Darkness set, of course, that he played of the three nights. There were fewer covers. And I think for most of the people listening, the first bootleg they heard from these stands would have been the September 19th show, the famed Piece de Resistance release. And I don't recall hearing the 920 release when I was a younger fan. I definitely heard this release, the 921 release, which was a bootleg release called The Boss's Birthday Party, and that I loved when I got my hands on it, which I don't think was too far after I first heard Piece de Resistance.
Yeah, I think the Boss's Birthday Party came out sometime in the mid to late 90s. And yeah, supposedly, and I don't know how true this is, but I read recently that it was taken from the line feed video from this show. Of course, the video has yet to circulate. We all want to see the stripper coming out of the cake. But of course, it was kind of a flat sounding soundboard. It definitely didn't have any pop to it. And then in 2012, Jim was able to find it wasn't quite the multi-track, but it was a live on the fly mixdown onto two tracks. So it definitely sounded pretty much like a multi-track. It had everything there. And so it wasn't until then that I really gave the show a good listen.
See, I always love the show now, and it all runs together because I would have heard Piece de Resistance certainly by 1985 when I was first really getting into Bruce. So it may have been a gap before I actually heard the September 21st show if Boss's Birthday Party didn't come out until the 90s. But I was always a big fan of this show. And getting back to my question, I mean, what do you think? I would probably say, again, much like with Winterland, because the purest and first experience here was the September 19th Piece de Resistance, that one has tremendous meaning for me. But I've always loved listening to the show. I think I would put the September 20th show, the last of the three, although that in no way says anything bad about the show, it's a 10+. It's just that these were insanely great shows.
Well, it's definitely incredibly hard to rank these. It's almost like you want to have 1A, 1B, and 1C.
Yeah.
As you said, the 19th is a more of a pure darkness show. And I think they were all business. As you said, they were on the radio. It was going out all over the Northeast. And so I think they were focused and they were more intense, whereas the next two nights, Bruce had more fun. He was loose with the crowd. There was a lot of crowd interaction, especially on the 21st. Now, the 20th, as I mentioned earlier, was mixed by Bob Clearmountain. So I think that is the best sounding one of the three. And I would have a hard time choosing between the 20th and 21st in terms of which one I like better. Maybe because of the fever in High School Confidential, that the 21st would get my nod as the best one.
I certainly prefer High School Confidential to Good Rockin' Tonight, which opened the second show. I do have a question about that. I was looking at the liner notes today from these releases. The Clear Mountain mix says it was done in the fall of 2016. I'd have to, let's see, do I have it in front of me? I think that's what it said, exactly the fall of 2016. Do you know why Clear Mountain mixed that one release out of all these shows in 2016?
I have no idea. I was kind of expecting the 21st to also be mixed by him, because if he did that one, maybe he would have done this other one, but no. And that is kind of a mystery. I wonder if they were going to maybe make it a Record Store Day release or something, but obviously that didn't happen. And it is unusual for Clear Mountain to do one of these releases, especially considering that he usually does the big Sony ones. So that's definitely a notable exception in this series.
Yeah, and the other thing, now that I does say fall 2016, the other curious thing is mixed by Clear Mountain fall 2016, as I said, mastered by Al Schiller December 2017. So for some reason, they had Clear Mountain mix this, and then they sat on it. It is like they were potentially looking for something else to do with this, and maybe it was going to be a Sony release at a certain point. If there was actually any chance this would have been a vinyl Record Store Day release, A, take my money, and B, what the hell happened? But that's just speculation on our part.
But, yes, it is.
I think all three releases sound really good. Al Schiller did very good jobs on both the first and the third shows as well. I understand he's not Clear Mountain. One thing we don't know is Clear Mountain may have been given more time and a bigger budget, because we do believe that he is more expensive and he generally takes more time with these things than Al Schiller would do. But because we don't know the circumstances of what led to Clear Mountain being brought in to do this, it's obviously a question we can't answer.
No, it's not. And it is interesting to note that it did come out, the 20th did come out in December of 17. And as you said, Clear Mountain had mixed it a year earlier. So it definitely, Maybe they just said, well, what do we have here that's available? And that's what they went with, though. But I don't know. One thing I do want to mention is on Independence Day, on this recording, where at the 310 mark, it changes sources. I guess they had lost or it was damaged, the multi-tracks were damaged, and they had to go to the gems release. And it's pretty seamless for the most part. It just seems like there's more echo on Bruce's voice and a little bit more crowd noise for a bit there. But if it's a question of using a patch from a already excellent sounding bootleg or not releasing it at all, I'm all for the patch.
Yes, 100%. This show had to be released. We've talked about it a number of times over the years when we did shows that would likely be released in the future. One of the interesting things is now we have, I think, all of the major Darkness releases. There may be one more show that from the tour that we haven't heard that could be out there, right?
There are two more. There's the other Berkeley show from 78. We have the first, July 1st. June 30th was also at Berkeley, and I believe we just have to assume that if they recorded the second night, they recorded the first. And then the other one is the Phoenix show, the one that spawned the Rosalita video. Got to think that was recorded in multi-track as well. I would hope that they recorded the whole show and not the five or so songs that ended up on the Darkness box. But for better or for worse, they're the basically very similar shows all around to Berkeley. Roxy, obviously, in there was very different, but but Phoenix and Berkeley, both Berkeley is all very similar in set lists, but that's the way it is.
Yeah, and as we've discussed before, in the classic era, we know they're getting closer to the end, certainly, for what they have left. And at a certain point, they'll either have to make the choice to do mainly modern day stuff, or as you would like, go to two track material if they have it. But there's not that much left from this classic era. And as we say all the time, it's an embarrassment of riches. You know, the fact that we have all three Passaic shows now released professionally, it's fabulous.
Oh, absolutely. It's just amazing. All three Passaics, both Winterlands, both Atlantas, Agora, Roxy, it is amazing. And I think they have about 2 years, about 24 or so releases that they can do before they really need to start figuring out something else. And that would mean, and that would even start 8 or 9 months from now after the tour is over. So we could be going through 26 at this point without really, without them stretching too much.
Right. And of course, we're going to look forward to the remaining releases from this period. There's a couple, certainly from the Meadowlands, 1981. We're still looking for I Don't Want to Go Home to be released. Mm-hmm. So there's some fun stuff ahead. And it may take a little while, as you were just saying, before we get to that. But in the meantime, we'll enjoy the tour releases.
Yeah, I think the other big one would be one of the Tower shows from 75. Obviously, they've released the New Year's Eve show, and we think they have at least the 30th available, or at least on multi-track as well. And so those would be two of the ones, most anticipated ones, at least from me.
One other thing we wanted to note, of course, this is dedicated to the archive release, but Bruce did make an appearance last night with John Mellencamp. While many people were watching the Oscars, they played Pink Houses. Bruce seemed from the video to be in good shape and sounded good. So we're about a week away from the tour beginning, and that's all, I think, good news.
Yes, it is. And I anticipate that's going to be one of the songs they sing together at the Monmouth event, Monmouth Archives event next month. And I guess we would have expected them to do Wasted Days as well, but I don't know if he's doing a lot of stuff off his new album. I think he's doing a lot of more of his own classic era material.
Yeah, and you and I have seen Mellencamp a couple times together in the last decade or so. That's the type of show he plays. So I haven't really looked at the set list from this tour. If he came to LA and I could catch him, I would. But it's pretty much the same thing now from tour to tour.
Yeah, seems like a lot of those rockers are doing it. I guess Bruce is putting more new stuff in his show than some of his peers, but still not enough for some of his more dedicated fans like us, right?
Yes. Well, we'll see what happens next week. Of course, we're going to report on that heavily. Probably the next episode will be dedicated to the start of the 2024 tour and looking at everything that happens in Phoenix and Vegas and probably San Diego. So that's a lot to look forward to. And it's just great that Bruce is healthy now and hopefully going to proceed without any issue and that this will be a very successful year of touring.
Let's hope so. I'm kind of wondering if he's fully healed from his ulcer, that maybe he'll be able to sound check some more or mix things up, but not holding my breath, and we'll be happy with just him on stage, period.
Time is finite. This is not going to last forever. I know that we've said that a number of times, and one of the other things we've said, which is a cliche, but so sadly true, Father Time is undefeated.
Yes, he is. Yes, sadly, he is.
All right. Well, I'll wrap it up for tonight. None But the Brave is a presentation of Evergreen Podcast, produced by Bull Market Entertainment. On Twitter, you can find us at MBTB Podcast. And check out our Patreon page for our bonus offerings that we do throughout the month, patreon.com/MBTB Podcast.
So for Hal Schwartz, I'm Flynn McClain saying thanks for listening, and we'll see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much. We'll be seeing you.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.